Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. And given the fact that summer is over, we begin autumn, we've begun fall, and we have to say goodbye to a season everybody loves. I would think everybody, but maybe not Kevin McHugh, who wrote this next essay. But it is over, and Kevin celebrates it in a different way from the Chicago Tribune. Summer's over, hooray. At last, we're relieved of the duty to have all that fun. Kevin writes, so here we are again at summer's end. The kids are back in school. The beaches have closed, and the ballparks will follow in a few weeks. Cubs for sure, maybe not the Sox, though. Each day ends a bit earlier, the light coming at sharper angles as the sun sets further and further to the south, and the air takes on hints of autumn crispness. With the season's passing comes the end of all those activities, picnics and barbecues, street festivals and art fairs, outdoor concerts and movies in the park, that just weeks ago seemed to offer endless amounts of sun-drenched fun. And not a moment too soon, because really, could you bear another week of knowing there was so much summertime fun you could be having if only you had more time for it? Admit it. It's a relief that summer's over and you no longer feel pressured to take advantage of it. It's as much a part of the season as the Cubs raising hopes and then dashing them. That inevitable moment somewhere in mid-July when you think, where is the summer gone? With that thought comes the urgent sense that you must do something more with what's left of it. Get out on a boat. Play more golf or tennis or softball. Work in the garden or on your tan. But, unfortunately, it's a losing battle. By then, the days are already growing shorter. Within a few weeks, the 10 o'clock news, with commercials for back-to-school sales and reports from football training camps, foreshadows autumn's arrival, and it's downhill from there. Lost opportunities for summer enjoyment cause a particularly wistful kind of regret, as if they're somehow more precious than those of other seasons. Never mind that, truth be told. Much of summer is best spent indoors. There's a reason we have air conditioning and mosquito repellent. Like all neuroses, the yearning for more summer recreation has its beginnings in childhood. Unless you were one of those unfortunate farm children for whom summer vacation was originally intended and spent May through August working in the fields, your summers were probably spent at the pool, at camp, and complaining that there was nothing to do. Remember when all you had to do all day was avoid the crushing burden of having to mow the lawn? Childhood establishes the precedent that summer is a months-long interlude of carefree leisure, and that shapes our expectations of the season long after adulthood teaches us otherwise. So, we're more annoyed than usual when we have to cancel an evening at Grant Park because there's too much work to do. Or spend a July weekend stuck in our home office finishing up a report. I'm going to raise a fuss. I'm going to raise a holler about working all summer just to try to earn a dollar, as the late Eddie Cochran sang. We seem to forget that the demands of work and family and friendships don't stop from June to September. If anything, they increase. A colleague observes that there are only a dozen or so weekends in a given summer, and half of them are filled with christenings, graduations, weddings, and other social obligations. Meanwhile, the kids are off from school, and unless they're old enough for summer jobs, someone has to shepherd them to the pool and to camp. But given that your average 8-year-old's days are more heavily scheduled than the president's, at least they're less likely to moan, "There's nothing to do." It's not that summer is no fun. A look back on my own calendar reminds me that I got to go to a few baseball games, ate some dinners at sidewalk cafes, and caught an outdoor concert where I rediscovered the serene pleasure of drinking beer out of a can on a summer afternoon. But somehow, it seems inadequate. The very overabundance of summer fun creates a no-win situation. No matter how much you do, you just can't do it all. Not with 3 different blockbuster movies opening each weekend and your neighborhood block party and drinks after work at that new beer garden. Still, we try to fit in as much of it as possible, with the result that everyone's so overextended that summer relaxation becomes yet one more source of stress. One friend of mine packed a circus performance, a barbecue, and a music festival into this past 4th of July. The following weekend, I found myself simultaneously scheduled to be at both a picnic with good friends, whom I hadn't seen in months, and my sister-in-law's birthday party. The traffic alone getting into many events is enough to make a person feel the end of the summer can't come soon enough. Wouldn't it be easier to acknowledge that summer isn't more fun than the rest of the year? It's just more humid? Eddie Cochran was wrong. There is a cure for the summertime blues. It's called Labor Day. Summer's over. Now I can finally relax. I don't know, Kevin, if that's true or not. But nonetheless, it is over, and now we look to fall. And we'll have some beautiful days in fall. Already started. I haven't seen that many of the trees turn their colors yet, but given the fact that we had no moisture at all, I'm sure that those colors will begin to turn, and the leaves will begin to fall, and we will begin to rake. Ad infinitum. I started a little bit last weekend, and I said to Mr. Greg Morrissey, I said, "Well, geez, 10 more times doing this, we'll have all the leaves raked," as they're still on the trees. Well, time marches on, right? Want to mention, of course, our good friend Pam Rose and Swirls Cupcakes kicks off a happy bear season at Swirls with an Izzy Bear Cupcake. From September 5th through October 6th, Swirls will be selling our Izzy Bear Banana Chocolate Chip Gummy Bear Cupcake, with all proceeds benefiting the Israel Adonijah Foundation, Great Bears player committed to connecting children and families in underserved communities. Israel will also be coming into Swirls to mix up a batch of his custom cupcakes. We're thrilled to welcome him into our shop. Stay tuned for pictures from his visit, and be sure to stop in to try a delicious Izzy Bear Cupcake while they're here, and go Bears. Of course, our good pal Pam Rose, one of the owners of Swirls Cupcakes, located at 705 West Belden, right around the corner from the old Children's Memorial Hospital. For information, 773-404-2253. And visit her website, Swirls, S-W-I-R-L-Z, cupcakes.com, because cupcakes make people happy. Make sure you call Pam again at 773-404-2253. Great lady. Interesting article on the internet. The results are in. Over 24,000 folks, young and old, and Josh will like this, my studio producer, voted for their favorite toy of the last century. The Children's Museum of Indianapolis announced on Thursday that G.I. Joe beat out such childhood favorites as Raggedy Ann and Mr. Potato Head. The first plastic action soldier came off the assembly line at Hasbro, ready to do battle in 1964. So, interesting. Favorite toy of the century. Well, that's something to be said. Let's go down the list here. To get the results, the museum asked the public to vote on the 100 toys and their stories that define our childhood. Museum curators had initially selected the top 100. The winners are from 20 to 1. 20, Mr. Potato Head. 19, Silly Putty. 18, Roller Skates. 17, Candyland. I love that game, Candyland. 16, Lincoln Logs. 15, Hot Wheels. 14, Little Golden Books. 13, Etch-a-Sketch. I used to enjoy that, too. And 12, Spirograph. 11, Raggedy Ann. Number 10, another game, board game, Monopoly. Number 9, Play-Doh. 8 is Crayons. 7, Cabbage Patch Kids. 6, The Bicycle. 5, Viewmaster. Viewmaster, remember those? I don't know if you can even get those anymore. Those are cool. 4, Barbie. Barbie beat out G.I. Joe. 3, Lego. 2, Transformers. And number 1, as I said, is G.I. Joe, which is kind of interesting. But how would you figure that the bicycle is a favorite toy? It's a bicycle. It'd be like a baseball mitt. Is that a favorite toy or not? I don't know. But anyway, so those are the top 5 toys of the century. G.I. Joe, Transformers, Lego, Barbie, and Viewmaster. Interesting. Well, we have a very special guest on our show today. I'm very much looking forward to chatting with him. One of the fun things about hosting my radio show is having the opportunity of making the acquaintance of some very interesting, talented, and fascinating people. And our next very special guest is just such a person. He's a man who's spoken to us through his music for many years. He is one of the foremost interpreters of the American songbook repertoire, continuing the tradition in music of such luminaries as George Gershwin, Irving Berlin, Frank Sinatra, and many others. He is a Grammy Award-winning performer who has appeared all over the world. We are all familiar with his music because the songs he shares with us have become standards that speak to each of us and just simply touch our hearts. An entertainer whose distinctive musical virtuosity not only sets the standard but defines the essence of excellence in music and song. World-renowned entertainer Michael Feinstein brings the American songbook to life with the Chicago Jazz Orchestra at the Auditorium Theater. Special tributes to George and Ira Gershwin and Frank Sinatra fill the Auditorium Theater for one night only, September 29th. Multi-platinum selling 2-time Emmy-nominated and 5-time Grammy-nominated entertainer Michael Feinstein sings his way onto the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University stage September 29th at 7:30. Considered one of the premier interpreters of American standard songs and dubbed the ambassador of the Great American Songbook, Michael Feinstein unites with Jeff Lindberg's world-renowned Chicago Jazz Orchestra to delight audiences and take them on a journey through some of the most beloved music of our time. Michael Feinstein not only sings the legendary classics of our American songbook, he is a legend in his own right, said Auditorium Theater Executive Director Brett Batterson. Combined with the one of the greatest artistic institutions in Chicago under the helm of Jeff Lindberg, Michael and the Chicago Jazz Orchestra will treat audiences to a night of pure musical pleasure and fill the Auditorium Theater with the music that has shaped the popular song today. And on the line right now, it's both an honor and a pleasure to welcome Mr. Michael Feinstein. Michael, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
I hope you heard the introduction because certainly heartfelt, and we're honored to have you on the show, but we're excited about having you come into Chicago. Of course, you've been in Chicago many times before, and we're looking forward to the great show on the 29th at the Auditorium. Are you familiar with the Auditorium Theater itself?
I keep hearing that the Auditorium is this spectacular place that's legendary. No, I haven't seen it, but from what everyone tells me, I can't wait to get there.
Well, it was designed by the great architect Louis Sullivan, of course, who had something to do with the World's Fair many years ago. So you're going to be quite surprised and enjoy quite a bit because it's a wonderful place, great acoustics, and everybody in Chicago is awaiting your visit here.
Well, thank you. That's very nice. I love Chicago, and I love the people, so it'll be good.
Well, of course, you're going to be playing some of the great music from George and Ira Gershwin and Frank Sinatra. When you were honing your craft and learning the art of music and so forth, Michael, who did you look up to? Who were some of the people you kind of were your mentors as you worked as a young person?
I started listening to this music almost in the womb because my parents played it around the house. The first records I listened to were Bing Crosby and Jolson, and then records of Fats Waller and Errol Garner. It was a whole hodgepodge of 78s my parents had in the basement of our house, and it was a patchwork education. But I'd say that my greatest influences vocally are probably Bing Crosby and Fred Astaire.
And I think people don't look at Fred Astaire as being a vocalist as well as a dancer, but he was.
Fred Astaire introduced more classic American songs than any other performer, and every songwriter I ever met who knew and worked with him said that he was their favorite interpreter.
Had you the opportunity to meet some of these greats when you were younger?
After I moved to California at the age of 20, I met Ira Gershwin, who, of course, wrote the lyrics to all of his brother George's melodies. So I worked with Ira for 6 years. I met Harry Warren, who was the most successful songwriter of the 20th century, writing songs like You'll Never Know and On the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe, and Jeepers Creepers, and An Affair to Remember, and 42nd Street, and Lullaby of Broadway. I knew Burton Lane, Cy Coleman, Leonard Bernstein. I met as many of these people as I could because I adored them all. I adored their work, and I would seek them out. And many times they were available. They didn't have a lot to do, and they were usually kind of shocked that a kid 20 years old even cared about their work.
You know, I imagine they were happy and honored that you continue to celebrate their work also.
I think just the fact that somebody that age that really understood and got the genre when there were so many others of my generation who didn't, I think that made them happy. And certainly for me, to be able to play these songs originally when I started in piano bars was something that became defining for my career.
You know, I had the opportunity to have on my show, very honored to have Alan and Marilyn Bergman on my show a while back, and talking to them, and I think you probably saw the same when you were talking to these greats that you had a conversation with, very down-to-earth, welcoming people. And I remember talking to Mrs. Bergman. I said, well, how do you and Mr. Bergman write the great lyrics, all the great songs? Because they wrote most everything in the 70s and 80s that were a hit. And he said, you know, we just do it right here at our kitchen table. Anytime you're in California, stop by. I thought, that's amazing. You know, you think it's more than that, but it's really not.
Well, of course, it's years and years of discipline and honing their craft, but at this point they're so facile and extraordinary. Marilyn and Alan and I have written several songs together, and I love them. I was with them 2 nights ago, actually.
Oh, really?
They're the most wonderful people. They're down to earth is the best description.
Do you still practice every day?
No, I never practice. I'm too busy. I'm too busy performing, and I don't. It may sound pretentious, and I don't mean it that way. But I never was. I was not. I'm not a schooled musician, so I don't really know from like practicing scales that stuff. I never did that. So most of my practice came from just being out there and doing it.
And you still have the same energy and enthusiasm for getting in front of a crowd and for getting in front of an auditorium and playing for the people, because I would imagine, Michael, that instant gratification of them sharing the unique talents you have, you must enjoy tremendously.
I love the songs. I started performing because I wanted to share the songs with people.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't consider myself a very capable performer, but I cared about the music. And then it evolved into something greater. And I still do it because I have the passion for the music and for the songs. And if I didn't have the passion, I would stop doing it because then it wouldn't be fair to me or to anybody.
Do you enjoy playing a smaller venue as compared to a larger venue, whether it's the Hollywood Bowl or whether it's a small cabaret scene?
Golly, the first time I played the Hollywood Bowl was very exciting. And the first time I played Carnegie Hall was thrilling. I love playing large venues. But the intimacy of a club is special. There, of course, are pitfalls. The pitfalls are that people can often be drunk or,
right.
You know, just...
sure, obnoxious, yeah.
It's not like a concert. There's right. distractions.
Right. Now, you have something coming out which is kind of exciting, which is a book and an album about the Gershwins and me. Tell us a little bit about that.
I wrote a book on the Gershwins from my point of view, and I say my point of view because having spent 6 years with Ira, I met a lot of his contemporaries and met a lot of people who told me stories and anecdotes and helped me to form a certain kind of view or point of view about the work of the Gershwins, and that's why I called the book The Gershwins and Me.
Mm-hmm.
And The Gershwins and Me is a sort of a compendium of their history in a way that is not linear. It's told through 12 chapters that are each devoted to a specific song that I use as a springboard for anecdotes, a lot of humorous stories about their work, because I wanted it to be something that would be welcoming to a person who might not know anything about the Gershwins, who might have some curiosity. So it's a book that's for sort of for every man, and I was thrilled when a friend of mine told me that Costco's going to carry it. So I guess that's kind of the ultimate, just trying to reach people that may have a curiosity. And it has a CD, as you mentioned. It has a CD in the book that's exclusive to that are new recordings of the 12 Gershwin songs by me.
Well, if it's at Costco, you'll reach everybody, actually.
Well, it'll be there, so we'll see. That's where my parents go for lunch every day. They eat all the samples.
Had you the opportunity to meet or work with Frank Sinatra?
Yes, I didn't work with him, but I knew Sinatra. I'd been to his house a number of times, and he was very nice to me. And that's one of the reasons that when I play with the Chicago Jazz Orchestra on the 29th, I'll be doing a salute to Sinatra, mm-hmm. Because he was very encouraging to me when I was younger, and he had no reason to be anything to me, and I was very very touched by that. I was initially playing at a party for his wife Barbara's birthday, who still is a good friend, and he came over after I'd been playing for about an hour, playing all these obscure songs that had been connected with him. I really did my research, you know. And he came over and leaned over the back of this upright piano in the corner of this little party room at Chasen's, and he said, "How do you know all those songs? How old are you, 12? And then he invited me to sit with him and started telling stories. Then I was invited to the house for dinner, and it was quite a heady experience.
You know, I've had Tom Dreesen on the show, who's, of course, spent a lot of time with Sinatra in his day.
Oh, yeah.
And Tommy's from the south suburbs here in Chicago. And he's got quite interesting stories about Sinatra. But he seemed like just a regular guy when he needed to be. You know, we adulate some of the great stars and the entertainers and so forth. But down-to-earth guy, as you said, when you cut through all of the responsibilities that he has, you know.
Yes, indeed.
We had the opportunity having Roger Williams when he was alive on the show. Very, very nice man. And he played for every president, going back to Lincoln or something. And just a nice, nice guy. Of course, he passed away a while back. Who were some of the piano players you enjoyed listening to, or you still do enjoy listening to?
I mentioned Errol Garner and Fats Waller. I love the stride piano sound. I loved listening to Art Tatum. Bill Evans is a god,
sure, yeah.
You know, amazing. And Andre Previn, with whom I just did an album that will be coming out next year.
Really?
The chance of recording with Andre Previn at the piano was quite a thrill. Andre's 84, and that was a real gift. I listened also to Cy Walter, who was one of the great, great pianists and is not very well known. But
not familiar
amazing,
with him, yeah.
Amazing website on Cy Walter. He played mainly in New York nightclubs, and he was a true genius. He was for me, as great as Art Tatum. He was extraordinary. Stan Freeman is another pianist
who
I listened to a lot.
You know, Andre Previn, great composer too, Andre Previn was.
Oh, yes. Andre, I think, wrote something like 75 film scores.
Wow.
And just wrote a piece that the Boston Symphony premiered last month, and he's written two operas and many other works.
Now, Cy Walter, I'm not familiar with him. What would I know that he wrote?
Cy Walter is a pianist. He's
right.
You wouldn't know him as a songwriter. But Cy Walter did very famous transcriptions of songs like Begin the Begin and Crazy Rhythm, and did arrangements that are now being recorded by classical pianists.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you go to cywalter.com, you can discover them. I think I might have a couple of Cy Walter recordings on my website, michaelfeinstein.com, as well. But Cy is one of those unsung heroes, and I spend a lot of time trying to resuscitate interest in some of these lost personalities, because they have created what has made it possible for me to be here.
Well, we stand on the shoulders of those who have come before us, people like Cy Walter and Andre Previn and all the greats, and all we can do is celebrate that legacy and move forward and enhance it any way we can.
Absolutely.
Michael Feinstein's repertoire spans decades of some of the most beloved classics ingrained into the American songbook, and this special Chicago engagement will pay tribute to some of the greatest legends of our time. As a special preview of his new book and album, The Gershwins and Me, Michael Feinstein will perform the beloved melodies of George and Ira Gershwin, Love Is Here to Stay, Someone to Watch Over Me, and Embraceable You are just a few of the timeless standards that will imbue the auditorium theater. Feinstein will also honor the legendary Frank Sinatra as he features selections from his Grammy Award-nominated CD, The Sinatra Project, and its follow-up, The Sinatra Project, Volume 2, The Good Life, with thrilling staples like Luck Be a Lady, Come Fly With Me, Witchcraft, The Way You Look Tonight, and more. Combined with the finesse and brilliant styling of the Chicago Jazz Orchestra, these musical masterpieces are brought to life for one night only in a thrilling journey through the golden age of song. Multi-platinum selling, two-time Emmy-nominated and five-time Grammy-nominated entertainer Michael Feinstein sings his way onto the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University stage September 29th at 7:30, considered one of the premier interpreters of American standard songs and dubbed the ambassador of the Great American Songbook. Michael Feinstein unites with Jeff Lindberg's world-renowned Chicago Jazz Orchestra to delight audience and take them on a journey through some of the most beloved music of our time. For information, 800-982-2787. Or the Auditorium Theater box office for tickets. On the line with us right now is Michael Feinstein. Michael, thanks very much for taking a little time. As I said before, it's a pleasure to have you on. And from your many fans and our listeners, thanks for sharing your unique talents with all of us. And look forward to seeing you here in Chicago next week.
Oh, thank you, Kevin. Thanks for having me on the show. And I can't wait to get in front of that orchestra. They're one of the great ensembles. It's going to be a swinging night.
We're all going to have fun. Safe travels, my friend.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Michael. Bye-bye. Michael Feinstein, one of the classic, certainly the classic entertainers in music and today, and it'll be fun to see him next week at the Auditorium Theater again at the Saturday, September 29th, 7:30 at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, which is located at 50 East Congress Parkway. For information, 800-982-2787. Very, very talented guy. Of course, his book's coming out at Costco, as he said, The Gershwins and Me, comes with a CD. The melodies of George and Ira Gershwin. Of course, George wrote the music and Ira wrote the lyrics. Love Is Here to Stay, Someone to Watch Over Me, Embraceable You, and just a lot of great music. And, of course, he'll play Sinatra. And all Sinatra's great music also. So given the opportunity, please stop by. And accompanied by Jeff Lindberg's world-renowned Chicago Jazz Orchestra, as he said, things will be swinging. It'll be a great evening. Well, we're going to jump to a little music. I thought we'd play great Judy Collins. We had Judy Collins on her show a while back, and she has a CD entitled Classic Broadway. Had the opportunity to see A Little Night Music at Writer's Theater over the summer. They did a great job up there. Michael Halberstam, of course, the artistic director, always does a terrific job with what he presents up at the Writer's Theater in Glencoe. It's one of the classics. We've heard Tony Bennett sing it. We've heard Frank Sinatra sing it. And nobody does it better than Judy Collins in Send In the Clowns. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Isn't it real? to love fast. My fault, I feel. I thought that you'd want what I want. Sorry, my dear. But where are the clouds? Quick, send in the clouds. Don't bother. Isn't it rich? Isn't it queer? Losing my timing this late in my career. But where are the clouds? There ought to be clouds.
Judy Collins from her CD Classic Broadway, and of course from the Sondheim musical, A Little Night Music, Send in the Clowns. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. Talk about poetry and music. Poetry also lost a good pal of ours a couple weeks ago and came across a poem written by the poet Diana Durr Hovhaniesian. And Diana Durr Hovhaniesian is a New England-born poet. She was a Fulbright professor of American poetry and is the author of more than 25 books of poetry and translations. She has awards from the National Endowment for the Arts, the Poetry Society of America, the National Writers Union, the Armenian Writers Union, and the Armenian Ministry of Culture. She works as a visiting poet and a guest lecturer on American poetry and Armenian poetry and translation and the literature of human rights at various universities here and abroad. She also serves as president of the New England Poetry Club. She wrote a poem entitled Shifting the Sun, and it has to do with the passing away of one of her friend's fathers. And very touching, and I thought I'd share this with you because certainly something I will use when lose some of our friends here in the future. Again, titled Shifting the Sun. Diana writes, "When your father dies," says the Irish, "you lose your umbrella against bad weather. May his son be your light," say the Armenians. "When your father dies," say the Welsh, "you sink a foot deeper into the earth. May you inherit his light," say the Armenians. "When your father dies," say the Canadians, "you run out of excuses. May you inherit his son," say the Armenians. "When your father dies," say the French, "you become your own father. May you stand up in his light," say the Armenians. "When your father dies," say the Indians, "he comes back as the thunder. May you inherit his light," say the Armenians. "When your father dies," say the Russians, "he takes your childhood with him. May you inherit his light," say the Armenians. "When your father dies," say the English, "you join his club you vowed you wouldn't. May you inherit his son," say the Armenians. "When your father dies," say the Armenians, "your son shifts forever, and you walk in his light." Very interesting poem. Saying, of course, how each of the ethnic groups feels after the death of a father. And the Armenians liken it to the light in your life and how that changes When your father dies, say the Armenians, your son shifts forever, and you walk in his light. Diana Dare Hovhannisyan. I'm going to try to get her on our show, maybe chat a little bit about her work and her poetry. Very interesting. I saw that this morning in Mary Shmeek's column and had to research it and share it with everyone. Had the opportunity to see the I Love Lucy Live on Stage show this past week. Was the press opening. We had, of course, Bill Mendieta, who is portrays Ricky Ricardo on the old I Love Lucy show. He does it on the stage at the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Play. It's kind of fun. And it brings you back to when they were taping these shows. They did it in front of a live studio audience. So you become part of that studio audience. And you are enjoying all the accoutrements that come with it, including the commercials for Brill Cream and all the different products that they sponsored the Lucy show. And it was kind of fun. And it's on at the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Place, 175 East Chestnut, through November 11th. So if you get a chance, step back in time a little bit and enjoy that. Some of the great musicals that are to come, Broadway in Chicago this season, is Kinky Boots. It begins here in October at the Bank of America Theater. Inspired by a true story and based on the film Kinky Boots, features a warm and witty book by Harvey Firstein, who, of course, wrote Torch Song Trilogy and was the mother in Hairspray, of course, and a richly diverse musical score from music icon Cyndi Lauper in her stunning theatrical debut. In Kinky Boots, Charlie Price is forced to step in and save his family's shoe factory in northern England following the death of his father. Interesting that we just read that poem. Help comes from the unlikeliest angel, a fabulous drag performer named Lola. Together, this improbable duo not only revitalizes the near-bankrupt business, but helps one another grow into the men their fathers always dreamed their sons would become and transforms an entire community through the power of acceptance. Very interesting. Kinky Boots, so that'll be starting. I know we have something set up to talk with someone about that. Sister Act comes November 13th through the December 2nd at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University. Of course, I remember the great movie. And with Whoopi Goldberg. And for Christmas, Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the musical, from December 5th through the 16th at the Cadillac Palace Theater. Don't want to miss that. And War Horse, great movie, great movie. Winner of 5 2011 Tony Awards, including Best Play, will be at the Cadillac Palace Theater, 151 West Randolph, from December 18th through January 5th. It'll be something interesting to see over the holidays. After the first of the year, Peter Pan comes back with Kathy Rigby. That's always a lot of fun, from January 30th through February 10th at the Cadillac Palace Theater. And you see Kathy flying over the main floor stage, and everybody enjoys that. Rock of Ages will be back after its success here and in film, June 5th through August 5th. Stuffed and Unstrung. Of course, we had some of the creators of Stuffed and Unstrung, the Henson Alternative musical, on the show when it was here back a few months ago, and it'll be here from June 12th through the 17th. Rain, a tribute to the Beatles, from June 26th through July 1st, of course, was here. A lot of fun. And a lot of things going on. A lot of things going on in Chicago. And finally, Les Miserables will be here from November 14th through December 2nd at the Cadillac Palace Theater. So we don't miss that. It'll be here for the 15th time. But you always want to see it because always a lot of fun to watch. Very enjoyable musical, one of the great musicals of all time. Well, we're going to jump back to Judy Collins' CD Classic Broadway, one of the classics from Rodgers and Hart in the film Pal Joey, Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Again.
Judy Collins, Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. The Lynn Sage Foundation announces the 5th annual Chicago's in Good Taste campaign in conjunction with Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Local restaurants and businesses unite to raise money for breast cancer research. A courageous spirit and mother of two, Lynn Sage was diagnosed with breast cancer at the early age of 34, leaving behind her family and friends at the age of 39. Dedicated to her strong will and charismatic personality, the Lynn Sage Foundation was founded by her family, who have been raising funds for breast cancer research for over 20 years. Dedicated to finding a cure, the Lynn Sage Foundation, a world-class philanthropic organization, is proud to announce its 5th annual Chicago's in Good Taste campaign in conjunction with Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Beginning in October, Chicago's in Good Taste campaign will commence and run throughout the entire month. The foundation will bring together over 150 Chicago restaurants, bars, and businesses to raise funds for research at the Lurie Comprehensive Cancer Center of Northwestern University. When dining at participating restaurants and frequenting local businesses, patrons can choose to donate money to the Lynn Sage Foundation by adding $1 or more to their bill. And on the line with us right now is the nationally recognized advocate in the war against breast cancer, enthusiastic activist in bringing the awareness of breast cancer to women of all ages, a woman who energetically yet passionately carries on the legacy of her mom, and one of the directors of the Lynn Sage Cancer Research Foundation's annual In Good Taste, a breast cancer research initiative, our good pal, Laura Sage. Laura, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thanks, Kevin. So glad you had me here today. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Now you got 15 minutes. You have to talk all by yourself.
That would make me nervous any day.
Well, of course, it's October again. It's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and I'm going to be wearing pink, and everybody can do what they can when they go out into a restaurant in Chicago and donate a little bit to the campaign. Tell us a little bit about it.
So this is the fifth year that we've been conducting the campaign, which we call Chicago's in Good Taste, and we have over 130 restaurants this year helping us raise money for breast cancer research.
Wow.
The way that your viewers could help is try to patronize the restaurants that are supporting us this year. Let the restaurants know that you're going to the restaurants not only because you love their food and service, but also because you appreciate their support of breast cancer research right here in Chicago.
And there's a whole boatload of them.
Yeah. our website, which is lynnsagefoundation.org, lists all of the restaurants that are participating. And Open Table is a supporter of ours this year as well. So they actually have a special link. You can go on to Open Table and look for Lynn Sage Foundation supporters there as well.
Now, I have one of my friends from Swirls Cupcakes. Is Pam Rose involved in this?
She is involved. She is so generous to our cause consistently. So you can go buy a cupcake and donate to breast cancer research there at Swirls as well.
She's the best. And
so generous.
Yeah, she always helps out any way she can. I'm just looking at a list here. I hope this is up to date. We have Rosebud Steakhouses.
Yep, Rosebud Group.
Well, I'll let you throw a couple out there. I don't want to do this. You go do
that. Well, you know, we have some of the larger restaurant groups in Chicago, such as the Francesca's Group, Four Corners, which is a large bar group. We have several of the Let Us Entertain You restaurants, such as Paris Club, Wow Bao, National 27. We also have some of the smaller, more local restaurants. Justin's is a huge supporter of ours, Piccolo Sogno, Coco Pazzo. Some of the Boca Group is helping us, GT Fish and Oyster. There's really a diverse group of restaurant supporters. The one thing that they all have in common is that they want to help raise awareness and funds for breast cancer research.
I would imagine, Laura, that when you ask to participate, who would say no to something like this? And if they do, let me know, because I'm going to go talk to them.
Some people do, and sometimes it's understandable. It's a restaurant business is a very tough and challenging business, and especially for new restaurants, I think maybe they're reluctant and are concerned that it might disrupt their business. But once a restaurant's been on its feet for a couple of years, and we try to make it as easy on the restaurants as possible. We provide all of the supplies. We have a wide range of suggestions on how they can help us. I think that the restaurants that have supported us for the last year or two feel very comfortable doing it going forward.
Now, of course, 11 City Diner was pretty popular last year doing it, right?
You know, they were our largest supporter our first year.
Oh, first year, okay.
And they were very zealous, and they were great.
And some of the bars, too, I would imagine, you know, if you go into a bar and you order a cocktail or something, or a group of cocktails, well, how simple can that be? Just add a couple dollars to your bill. You're not. It goes to a great cause. People are going to want to do it.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the restaurants and bars might identify one particular drink and have the proceeds go to us. So Lux Bar, Hugo's, Cortino's, they all have a special drink, which they dedicate the proceeds for us in October. Other bar groups like Schoolyard and West End, they'll actually sell cardboard ribbons, and with a donation, any patron will get one of these ribbons. They can write whatever message they want onto the bows, and they slap them on the walls of the bars.
And
towards the end of October, it's very festive in there.
And a lot of the restaurants, when you donate so much, they give you like a free dessert or something like that. They'll participate that way, which is very nice.
Yes, some will. I mean, what we try to do is to help our restaurant partners however we can, make it as easy on them as possible.
Well, you know, I didn't realize your mom was a very young woman when she passed away. Tell us a little bit about that story.
You know, my mother passed away when she was 39, and she had been diagnosed with breast cancer when she was 34. This was 26, 27 years ago, and you know, it was one of those experiences where she'd get sick, go to the hospital, maybe come home with a nurse and get better for a short period of time and then get sick again. The good news is I really do believe if someone were diagnosed with the same symptoms and severity as she today, that their prognosis for survival would be considerably better than hers was at the time.
You know, you think that I lost my mom, as you know, and we've talked about that before, and it's uncanny. She was at Rush, and we were talking to one of the Melody Kublai was the doctor who took care of her, and 2 years into it, when we started, she said, well, this is going to happen 6 months, it's going to happen a year, it's going to happen. And I'll be darned if it wasn't exact. And and we just all saw this change, and she was gone 2 years later. And you always ask yourself, could I have done something different? What if I would have done this? Or what if we would have went here? And how could that have changed things? But, you know, then yes, but maybe not. But now I think, like you say, that there are more opportunities maybe to prevent this from happening. And what you're doing are bringing that awareness out in the to everyone that this something maybe could be different.
Yeah, I mean, it's genuinely a disease that money has helped make treatments better. And giving people the opportunity to be empowered by being aware from genetic testing and the likes. And, you know, what my sister and I are trying to do is make sure that you know, our younger sister, my niece, my sister's daughter, and any other family doesn't have to go through something like this in the future.
Yeah, you know, of course, you and your sister are involved in this, in the program and the initiative and so forth. Every day you work on this, and you reach out to people, and people are responsive, and I think that's such an important thing. What can we do, aside from, of course, the Chicago's in Good Taste, what else can we do to help out? How can people who are listening today, besides going and participating and patronizing the restaurants, how else can we help out?
You know, we're very grassroots based, so aside from monetary donations, which we're always happy to take and always able to take on our website, you know, we're always interested in people who want to volunteer, particularly this time of the year. There are a lot of different ways we can utilize human capital. And again, I would ask anybody that has an interest in doing that, go onto our website, which is lynnsagefoundation.org. My personal email is on the site. Email us, contact us, and you know, we'd love to work with anybody that has an interest and customize something that makes them feel good.
And let's make sure that we define this, because I know I've confused this before. There is the Lynn Sage Foundation, and then there is the
Lynn Sage Cancer Research Foundation.
Right,
so there are
actually
two organizations named after my mother, and the family for the past, call it 8 years, has been exclusively affiliated with the Lynn Sage Foundation.
Okay.
And we exclusively raise money for local breast cancer researchers.
Mm-hmm. What's coming up in the future of breast cancer research, Laura? What are you seeing? Are we making headway here? Are we accomplishing anything? Do we see any breakthroughs that are going to help us here?
Yeah, I mean, there are always minor breakthroughs, and you know, early detection is I think very helpful these days. Genetic testing is something that any young woman or man with a strong family history is really encouraged to do. That's something that's only been developed in the last 10 years or so. Mm-hmm. You know, our researchers are working the gamut from diet and how that can affect breast cancer or your survival rate if you do have breast cancer, to you know, more genetic indicators.
Well, we always hope for the best and certainly praying every day for that. 100% of the funds raised throughout the month of October will go directly to breast cancer care, education, and research by Northwestern scholars at the Cancer Center. Under the direction of Dr. Steve Rosen, the center's well-established program in breast cancer research is fortified by a state-of-the-art 15,000-square-foot research facility providing a revolutionary space for finding a cure. Chicago's In Good Taste campaign, hosted by the Lynn Sage Foundation, brings together local restaurants and businesses during Breast Cancer Awareness Month of October in order to raise money for breast cancer research. Now in its fifth year, the campaign hopes to unite Chicagoans and visitors by providing them with a straightforward way to assist in finding a cure for cancer. Patrons at all participating in restaurants, salons, and retail stores around the city can donate to the cause on the receipt of their purchase throughout the month of October. This year, the Lynn Sage Foundation hopes to have over 150 participating in restaurants, salons, and retail stores. And the line with us right now is our good friend Laura Sage. Laura, I'm going to ask you to give us a website or phone number people can contact you again.
Absolutely. So our website is lynnsagefoundation.org. Our general email address, which really goes straight to me personally, is info@lynnsagefoundation.org. And our phone number is 312-488-1457.
And if you can't eat at a restaurant every day, a new restaurant every day, at least send something to the Lynn Sage Foundation to help out, because it's certainly for a worthwhile cause. Always a pleasure, kiddo, to have you on the show. You always do great. And
thank you, Kevin.
We're going to enjoy the month of October, helping out any way we can. And if there's anything else we can do, you know, don't hesitate to ask.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate chatting with you.
Thank you, Laura.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Laura Sage, one of the great ladies in Chicago who certainly dedicated to continuing the legacy of her mom, Lynn Sage, with the Lynn Sage Foundation's fifth annual Chicago's in Good Taste campaign in conjunction with Breast Cancer Awareness Month. A lot of restaurants participate. A lot of people want to help out. Very easy to do. Add a couple bucks to your bill, and that certainly will go to a great cause. And for information, again, 312-692-5074, or go onto their website, lynnsagefoundation.org. One last essay about summer from Jack Spadafora, the great editorialist from Park Ridge. It's closing time for summer. One look at the calendar and people start saying such inevitables as, where did the summer go? It's time for school. It's time to get out the sweaters. It's time for the report on everything going on in the news. There's a clear thread running through that tapestry, and that is time. No matter how we weave and loop it, time is always there in our lives to be reckoned with. It turns out some of us take special notice of it at this special cusp of the year. Maybe the best way to describe arriving fall is a closing up time. While spring is an opening up thing, fall starts to close up for the long winter sleep. Lawns and gardens shrivel, trees and bushes dry, so do the sunshine hours. Is that bad? Many of us don't think so. When the world around us is popping and bursting open with new life, intuition calls for action. When it chills and darkens, intuition calls for reaction. Reacting to the inwardness drama going on around us and inviting some inwardness of our own. While there are fewer hammocks, beaches, picnics, and hikes up ahead, there are more fireplaces, books, quiet conversations, and intimate reflections waiting. If you're very young, that may sound dull. If you're very old, it sounds like more of the same. For those of us in between, closing up time sounds like catching up time. It's true. You know, the springtime busier we are, the more I meant to do things pile up. Well, right now, in this gently closing up time between the dog days of August and the fun days of December, there exists this special time during which we can do some of those special things we've been meaning to do all year long. And no, that doesn't mean just cleaning out the garage. From Jack's metaphor. Well, that about does it for our show today. Thank you for sharing this last hour with me, and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. Especially like to thank Laura Sage from the Lynn Sage Cancer Research Foundation, of course, In Good Taste, a breast cancer research initiative. For information, 312-692-5074. And, of course, the very talented Michael Feinstein, who will be appearing with the Jeff Lindberg and the Chicago Jazz Orchestra, the Great American Songbook, at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, September 29th, next Saturday at 7:30, 50 East Congress Parkway. For tickets, 800-982-2787. Delightful talking with Michael Feinstein. What a talented, talented man. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have at the very least done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a good day.
How do you not run out of new things to say? And if we know we're always changing, why should it be the same? And tell me how, year after year, you're sure your heart will fall apart each time you hear her name. I know the way for you, it's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. But in your eyes, I may not see forever. Forever. Be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose. The music the music. The music.